March Madness. Here we are already. It's March. In the same week, Mayor Don McCormick, I had the opportunity to spend the afternoon sitting next to a fellow who had been born and raised and always lived in Kimberly. And I said naively, so you lived through that big change when the mine closed. And he'd worked in the mine. He said, yeah. And he said, you know, this is a better city for it. And I said, really? Yeah. And in the same week comes the results of a survey about how do you feel about Kimberly. Now, I understand that 470 whatever number of people doesn't represent the whole community. But aren't we building on from a position of strength in Kimberly, British Columbia, where for a long time we were playing catch up with, are we going to survive? Don't we have an easier road to pursue than we might have?
Perhaps. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not sure any road is easy. however, I think what this person would have been describing and what I'm observing is the transition is not just about, you know, a physical transition or mm-hmm. things changing. It's about a psychological transition. And when the, in most one industry towns, lots of mining towns, maybe pulp mills, resource-based towns tend to be kind of single industry towns.
Of which Canada has many.
The expanse, the rural areas, exactly. There are very many. You get this, the entire community revolves around that particular industry. And as long as the money is flowing and the jobs are there, you know, there's no reason to change. And
or to act independently.
And with the closure, you know, which is a fairly radical, you know, thing to have happen, with the closure of the mine, it forced everybody to take a look beyond where that was and into, you know, what are our possibilities. And I think over the last 15 years, those possibilities have been evolving in a number of different directions. And I think that's what a lot of people are referring to and feeling, you know, pretty good about the community at this point.
Well, that leads back to, I'm sort of in the old business mindset, things that we've talked about. The Cranbrook-Kimberly Initiative on Development, mm-hmm. how are we doing?
Well, it's still early days. It will be for a while. I mean, realistically, we're 3 months into the foundation of the program. And as of the 29th, which was Monday, CBT, or that was the benchmark day for matching funds from CBT. And it looks like we have something in excess of $500,000, which is what the goal was, mm-hmm. In the kitty to promote, you know, the area. So our initial goal has been achieved, and now it's a matter of getting some leads in and getting out and starting to pursue. Realistically, we are anywhere from, you know, 3 years at the earliest to probably as many as 5 years before we'll start to see some appreciable results. And when I say appreciable results, we may have some industry or some businesses setting up here before then, but in terms of jobs, in, you know, more plentiful numbers of jobs, we're probably, you know, as I said, 3 to 5 years, probably 5 years out realistically before we'll be able to say this was successful, we've achieved our goal.
But you're on schedule.
We are on schedule so far, you bet. We have probably a half a dozen or eight leads that we in fact have come in.
Great.
That Mayor Pratt and I are beginning to pursue. And so that's well ahead of schedule. We didn't think we'd have things to begin working on here quite so quickly. And from a promotion and a kind of help getting the program set up from the provincial government, they have been extremely helpful as well. Not so much in terms of resources, but in terms of getting us plugged into where the leads and opportunities are, which is really all we want from them anyway. The Ministry of Jobs, Tourism, and Skills Training has been very, very helpful. They're pretty excited about what it is we're doing. And pretty much everybody who hears about it looks at it as a bit of a template that said, wow, that's a pretty good idea. And if Kimberly and Cranbrook can do this and work together, you know, why can't we do that?
This is not news.
No, you know what, Paula? There's an old saying that there is no such thing as a new idea.
Yeah, well, I guess
only,
not.
Only recycled ideas whose time has come.
I'd not heard the second part. You mentioned the resource base of many, many communities of all sizes in Canada and in other parts of the world. I look on the hillside above our town, and I think lumber in terms of resource, which has just been a gigantic part of certainly Western Canada's economic present and presumably future. How are we doing on, I know that I still have an opportunity until April to voice my opinion about the way that the forests are managed over my watershed.
The watershed?
Where are we with that?
Well, as you know, we had a bit of a hiccup here over the last several weeks. Overall, I think we are managing in a very good way. I mean, we don't have anything that is out of control. Let me maybe step back and kind of explain. So the Mark Creek watershed, if you take a look at the total area that has been logged to date, it represents about 10% of the watershed. So if you look at it in terms of, you know, the whole watershed, the Watershed Committee and the forestry companies have been working together and have done a reasonably good job of not raping and pillaging with respect to the watershed. The issue is that of the entire watershed, of that 10%, it's broken up into sections within the watershed, and not all of those sections are being logged equally. So you'll end up with a section that has maybe 40% of that particular section is logged. And then the location of that comes into play relative to the reservoir and relative to the wetlands and kind of other things that do in fact directly impact our water. So what we had was a situation where the logging plan that was put in front of us provided some surprises. The communication wasn't very good, and the plan that was put in place clearly drew a direct line to bad things happening for us. So what we've been working very hard on over the last couple of weeks is getting everybody's attention to say, let's get back to where we were with negotiations with the Watershed Committee and having a behavior that is consistent with the logging companies getting their resources, but without putting our drinking water at risk. And, I think I don't know that we're there yet exactly as we speak today, but we're well on our way to getting back to some,
There was a time.
Are they listening?
Well, there was a purpose of a letter that was officially sent from the city to the Minister of Forests, Steve Thompson. It went to Interior Health. It went to BC Forest Sales. It went to our MLA. We got a number of other government folks involved. So there was a lot of dust that was stirred up over this, and a lot of attention that's been given to it. So
hopefully,
I'm optimistic that we will be kind of back on track to managing this in an effective way.
Well, and there was a time when wetlands were something you filled in, and we now know how crucial they are to the well-being of an entire ecosystem, never mind just our water.
No, absolutely. So I am. The short answer to that is yes. I think we're very close to being back on track with that. And having gone through this, I think we've learned some things. A lot of us that weren't that close to us prior to this happening have a little better education now on, what the facts are, and that's always a good thing.
We're sort of in the long-range mode. We also have coming sometime in the foreseeable future a, shall I say, old people's athletic event.
Senior games.
I can say that.
Yeah. Well, from where I'm sitting, most of them are younger.
Well, that's right. Not till 2018, but that will come steaming down the road. How are we doing on that?
I think from an organizing point of view, and we're still in the early days, I don't think there's been a call for volunteers or anything like that yet, but I think from an organizational point of view that, we're getting the things done that we need to get done.
That's going to be a big deal.
It's going to be a huge deal.
Well, I ask that partly in terms of the long-range thinking in terms of economic development, because this is clearly an opportunity. I mean, I would call it free advertising. It's not, but it is a wonderful way to present the community to a much broader audience.
Absolutely.
Well, and one of our potential audiences is Kimberley as a retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. So we have some other events. I don't know if you had heard, it was announced yesterday that the Grand Slam of Curling is going to be having an event hosted by Cranbrook.
Great.
And I was at the announcement yesterday, and this is a regional effort. is what it is. It's not just Cranbrook. And in fact, I don't think Cranbrook can pull it off by themselves based on the number of hotel rooms that are going to be required. So again, you know, this whole concept behind Kimberley and Cranbrook being kind of a super community is absolutely true. And I think this is going to afford us an opportunity, even though the curling is going to be in Kimberley or in Cranbrook, it affords us an opportunity again to get similar exposure and participate in the economic rewards.
When is that?
It's going to be in November.
Of this year?
Of this year.
Ooh, get busy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, there has been one held before. It was about 4 years ago. So the organizing committee has been through this once. They know what they're doing. And it was mentioned yesterday that Cranbrook is now kind of on the list. So one of these will likely be happening here every 3 or 4 years.
Wonderful.
Or two to four years, depending on, you know, who else, you know, wishes to host these things.
Well, curling is a big deal.
It is. It truly is. Huge national audience on that. And again, opportunity for, you know, exposure to our region. So we've got that, the 55 plus games, and hopefully more of those kinds of events that we'll be able to bring to the area. And this is another advantage when we talk about the development initiative, our regional development. This is the advantage of having some critical mass by putting the resources of the two communities together.
Well, and then we do have a great big international capable airport. And people tend to say, how do you get that? Well, we've got this incredible airport.
It's true, Paula. It is one of the best kept secrets.
Yeah.
It's slowly been increasing every year. Load factors, I think 10% a year.
Well,
it's been a pretty healthy growth year over year. And it's still a reasonably well-kept secret, but it is an asset for us in the community.
We flew in from Salt Lake City to Kimberley Cranbrook, Great Northern, I can't say all of the fancy words, but and having that as an international airport was great, and I hope someday it comes back.
It definitely will be back. It continues to be international from a charter point of view.
Mm.
I mean, we have planes flying in direct from the U.S. quite frequently, and you know, so the Canada Customs process and everything, it still exists at the airport. So it truly is still an international airport. We just don't have that regular,
the regular
commercial service coming in. But I'm pretty confident that at some point in the future it will be back.
Great.
And on your favorite subject,
which one is that? Roads.
Well, the roads are important. When last we talked about the flume, there was still some disagreement. Has any progress been made on that, or are we still disagreeing?
There has been some progress. I think both sides have presented their case to an arbitrator, a referee. I'm not exactly sure what the official term is, but that's under review right now, and that individual is going, you know, clarifying questions from both parties, and we'll have a non-binding opinion that comes back, and we'll have an opportunity based on that opinion to have some kind of a settlement. And if we can't agree on that, then it will eventually go to binding arbitration.
You have been quite insistent that the most visible thing in a community is roads, and it's the last thing we get to. I was pretty excited when I heard that we were going to get all of that Jerry Sorensen Way redone.
Right.
And it was before I actually was walking along there down from the ski hill.
Right.
And I thought, oh, that's what he's talking about.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
I know. It's springtime anyway right now, you know, with the thawing going on.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But all the roads are pretty bad right now. And I was thinking of doing a Facebook post to just let everybody know that, yeah, we know the roads are terrible. It's kind of a seasonal thing, but then again, it's exacerbating what we already know to be a problem. And very soon here, as we're going through our budgeting cycle, we'll hopefully be able to bring an announcement, or at least bring the proposal that Scott Somerville and his and Mike Fox have been putting together for a more comprehensive roads program over the next 3 years. That's going to look at not just Jerry Sorensen, obviously, with the grant we got, but...
Well, $4.5 million ought to help.
Well, that's just for Jerry Sorensen.
And, but it takes a big load off of us.
Well, it's 4th Avenue, which is the road up into town site, is not in great shape either. We've got Norton Avenue. You know, if you look at all of the major thoroughfares, just about everything, with the exception of Knighton, which has been patched over the last couple of years, is in need of repair. And so we're going to come up with a more comprehensive plan, 3-year plan, to just get it fixed. Now, we're not talking about just resurfacing here, because when the pavement comes up, we need to fix the pipes underground.
So when and you talk bury about some the wires?
Cost, well, when you talk about the cost, though, associated with this, it's not just roads.
Yeah.
So we have had budget that's been put away for that. We are looking at some other innovative borrowing, try and get it done in a manner that's going to, show some results.
Reed borrowing at a very low rate.
Well, the interest rates are as low as they're ever going to get. There's no doubt. And if you're ever going to borrow, a substantial amount of money for that type of infrastructure, now is the time to do it. There's no doubt. The $4.5 million we got for Jerry Sorensen, though, has really been a catalyst in being able to, get at the plan.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, amazing. It also focuses people's attention, I would assume, in ways that would have been difficult otherwise.
Well, yeah, it also, it just kind of buoyed my spirits of, oh, all that stuff, golf courses and ski hills and all those people who live up there who come in from out of town and who now can feel that we care about them.
And
this
nice
is
roads.
A good thing.
Our accommodator group up on the hill, RCR and Kimberly Lodging and, the North Star Hospitality folks are pretty excited about it too.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
So we go ahead.
Yeah. No, everybody's excited.
We're all excited.
So what's the downside to this?
No, there is no downside.
Well, debt, but other than that, it's manageable.
But it's a small manageable. Amount and it's very manageable.
We're sort of talking about the long term, what are our short term opportunities and challenges?
Well, right now, basically, we have one and 1A are the budget, and of course our union contract with our city employees, our union employees.
When does that come due?
This past Monday, the contract expired. So we are exchanging proposals within the next week or 10 days, and we will be working our way through the negotiating process over the next whatever period of time to hopefully come to an agreeable solution. That's going to have clearly an impact on the budget as we're putting it together right now. So that's why I say it's 1 and 1A. Trying to get the things done that we need to get done within the financial constraints that we have is not easy. It's a real challenge, but it's one that we need to address head on. I have been adamant for a long time now that we can't just say what do we need to spend and go back to the taxpayers and raise our taxes. It's just not sustainable. And so we've been working just really hard this year with lots of debate because clearly not all of council is in agreement on what the right approach to this is. So we're still trying to work that out. But, I would say right now that's probably top of mind, for the next 2 months.
Do we have the information we need? Do we have enough data to be able to have the discussion that is about priorities based on knowledge, or are we still in the data collecting?
No, we've collected a lot of data, and the challenge that Scott has right now is to make sense of all of that data.
Turn it into information.
Correct, exactly, and come up with not just a 1 year or a short term, strategy for this, but what's the long term strategy? Mm-hmm. One of the shortcomings I think that I've observed of kind of our behavior in the past is that we've treated these budget cycles as, 1 year. Mm. Now, we have had a 5-year plan, and at one point we had a 10-year plan, but realistically, it's only the first 2 or 3 years max that you can predict with any degree of certainty. Mm. And, of course, that degree of certainty goes down as you go out, year over year. And I know from my previous experience as a counselor, we look at what the current year was and say, yeah, I appreciate that, there's other years in here. But once the current year budget was in, it was, we're done. And we don't look at it again until the following December or January when we're getting into the cycle for the next year. And we're working pretty hard right now to try and make this a much longer term view.
Excuse me, Bill.
Well, it seems like this is part of the growing up process. We were talking about being a company town for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now the responsibility is fully ours. Mm-hmm. We can't shuffle it off on tech or somebody. That's very true. Part of this is just the leadership, but also the community learning to do business in a different way, isn't it?
And in truth, I have observed over the last couple of years in particular a real change in people's expectations and behaviors with regard to that. That sense of entitlement, or, you know, the city being the, you know, the safety net, you know, for things going on. There is a whole lot less of that now than what I've observed in the past. And this is really good. I think our responsibility is the environment. It's to create the environment that allows business to prosper, that allows, you know, things to happen, but not to do those things or not be responsible financially for doing those things.
Three or four things all come together in my own head as you talk about the roads and infrastructure and budget. And just very, very quickly, are we going to be addressing all of our leaky water pipes while we're doing all of these things? Because we have 100-year-old pipes that are just spouting water and we've got water issues.
Right.
Short answer.
So those that are underneath the pavement that we're replacing, yes. And we also have budget in
place. Are those mains?
I'm sorry?
Are those water mains? Are those big pipes under the roads?
Yeah, exactly. Water and sewer. And we also have budget in place kind of beyond the roads and the roads budget to be able to address some of the other places where we know that we've got leaks and, you know, need to have the most urgent requirement for replacement. So it is a fairly comprehensive, you know, approach that we're taking to it. And I believe that over this next 3 years, we will make a lot of headway toward that infrastructure deficit that we've been talking about for quite a while now.
I'll bet we'll talk about it some more when we see you next month.
I'm sure we will.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Paula.